The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion.
Welcome back, listeners. In this episode, it's a continuation of Ian's interview. He will open by telling a story about dogs, and then we'll get into some other juiciness. If you want to hear the full interview, it's available on hearthtales.com, and the previous episode is available on freshfm.com. Enjoy.
I'll begin. Once upon a time, there was an island in the Pacific, and it was the island of the dogs, but you know, there was the king of the dogs, and the king of the dogs had his own little atoll, right? And right in the middle of the atoll was this beautiful fatty. So, you know, it had this house that was carved like a marae, you know, so welcoming, you know. It probably had large dog bones, as you entered the gates of this compound, you know. And inside the compound, there was another little fatty. Because I didn't tell you that every year, around the summer solstice, the king of the dogs called all of the dogs from all of the small islands around, and they had to bring their walkers and their little dogs. And they paddled their walkers and they went over to the king of the dogs. And you know why? Because the king of the dogs was just. He was just. Mm-hmm. Did I tell you he's a Jack Russell?
No.
You've got to know that the king of the dogs is a Jack Russell. The king of the dogs is a Jack Russell. And so they're all arriving now. You can see them. They're slowly coming from the islands. And there's going to be a big bow wow. It's going to go off, right? But these dogs are respectful to the king of the dogs. What are they going to do? When they arrive, like the Japanese tradition of we take our shoes off before we enter the house, the dogs would take their tails off. And they would go to the small fatty. It was called the tail house. And there would be a hook. And it had the names, you know, there's Chihuahua, there's Labrador, there's Retriever, you know, there's the Chocolate Brown, the Chocolate Lab, you know. And they would all place their tails on the hooks, and then they would come solemnly into the space, and then the bow wow started, you know, the big tables of food, and there was one of the they were juggling, you know, and one was on a unicycle, and this is, you know, like, wow, it's a big bow wow's happening. It would be going on, the food would get passed around, plates and plates of it, you know, and then there was a bell, you know, ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. And Jack Russell, woof, and everybody got real quiet. And then Jack Russell would say, I am ready to proclaim justice. Bring any complaints to me that you've had in the village. My dog has just walked into the space.
He's not complaining. She's not complaining.
Bring all of your problems to me right now, any complaints. So of course the border collie first, she steps up and she says, the boxer dog, she's been pissing on my favorite tree. And the whole room gasps. And Jack Russell says, oh, boxer, is this true? And boxer kind of it was a really good tree, it was a peeing tree, and I had to go pee on the peeing tree. Jack Russell says, okay, I want you to shake paws. And so dogs kind of shake paws and they make up, and everybody's like, oh, is there any other problems? And the Alsatian gets up. I dug this hole, I put this bone in the hole. I'd been leaving it, like curating it carefully. It's smelly, it was rank, it was 6 month old bone, and this, the guilty finger gets pointed, and just at this moment, at the back of the hole, woof, this woof does, and it's Chihuahua, and Chihuahua's going crazy, sniffing around, The chihuahua looks out and says, oh, the tail house. It's on fire. Oh, pandemonium. There's teeth, there's claws, there's scratching. And all of the dogs from the hall, they all try and bust out of the door all at the same time. Oh, it's a mess. There's bits of fur and scrabbling and sand and scratches going everywhere. And they run across through the smoke and they get to the little tail house. There's choking, smoking bellows coming out and they can't see. So each one of the dogs, they runs in, they just goes to any old hook and they grab any old tail. And they stick the tail straight back on their butt and they start to paddle the walker. And they paddle in the walker and they go off across the back to their own places. And one by one, they find their way home. And the way that the story gets told in the islands by the mama to the children, or by the grandfather to the children. They say, so now you know, children, every time a dog meets another dog, the first thing they do is they go to the back of the other dog and they look and say, is that my tail? I wonder if that's my tail. And the other dog, it turns around and goes around in a circle and says, is that my tail? No, that's not my tail.
That's beautiful.
And there's a piece about humor and dogs.
Yeah.
But there's also a piece about how a story can hold some kernel of truth. And the islanders were absolute magicians at translating humor and play into the origins.
Mm.
The origins of something so primal as sniffing each other's butts. So when I'm with a bunch of men around a fire now, I can use the story to say, hey, it's okay to sniff each other's butts here.
Yeah.
You want to have a scratch around and you want to work out where the pecking order is.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
So it can have a slight, a piece to...
I also love how what happened to the Alsatian's bone is never resolved.
Mm.
It's just left open.
Well, I left that there for you. So I've given you your bone.
Yeah.
So you get a piece of the story that's the hook.
Mm.
So let's go with the hook. How's that?
Yeah.
Let's go with the hook. We talked a couple of days ago about what does a hook mean? And, you know, I welcome in Maori. I'm not from Aotearoa, but I'm Maori.
Mm.
I practice Maori. And I feel the energy of Maori through the bird song, through the trees, through the stories, through karakia, and to tireo, and through my relation. And in it, Maui said, hey, I got a story for you. And do you? Okay, I'm all ears. Tell me about this. And Maui talked about the hook and the way that some folks wear a hook around the... They're offering the world that they're the humor. They have a capacity to have wit, to tell a joke or tell a yarn, but also to feed the village.
Mm.
Because this one, when you wear the hook, it says, I'm a fisherman. Yeah, I'm a fisherman. Right? And when I got this hook around my neck and I'm saying, I'm a fisherman, and all the connotations of that, because you go back to some person in Galilee who called a lot of fishermen to them, because that's how he was rolling. He wanted these ones that could feed the people.
Mm.
And Maui was a fisherman. The way I'm seeing it, Maui could feed the people. And how do we feed the people? We have to trick the fish. And when we trick the fish, this is a noble trickery. This is a play.
Mm.
This is a game which I'm going to tell. You got this bit? I'm going to tell the fish that I'm giving it free lunch. And the joke is that the fish is the free lunch, right? And so there's this play that we enter into as the human species, that there's a necessary and very important, respectful piece about the honoring of the transformation from that fish intelligence into our own bodies. And this is when my lens, I own it, that in that storying and in that relating to the fish and to the trickster and to the mischief or the the trickery. I find something that supports my own growth as a person, that I find that now I can look at when I'm intentionally creating an illusion to capture something.
Mm.
And I need to be in relationship with that as a storyteller, because I need to create a hook.
Mm.
And, you know, the hook line.
And as a storyteller, are there themes that you return to, do you think? Or
Yeah. Some of the themes that I've returned to recently, or one of the characters that I've returned to recently, is Raven. And the piece about Raven is informing a relationship with Origin. And so the theme of origins and origination comes really to a surface of a theme. I like interested in it because there's something primal in origins, like the origin of fire, the origin of the sun or the moon. And I can feel the breath of ancestors whispering while I'm telling a story, because there's some energy that they've offered to that story again and again. And I don't know how many different tellers have used the same story, or have been, not used, but been used by the story. They've become the vessel, and the story's poured out of them. And yeah, origin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so origins come up for me, and yeah, I'm stalked. Yeah. I'll name Dr. Martin Short with gratitude, because he talked about you should be hunted by a story, and I got interested in why I should be hunted, why I should be stalked. I thought I'm supposed to be in charge of the process, and I'm supposed to read the book, right? And then I learned the story verbatim. And what Martin Short was offering was just a little window into a different way of receiving a story. So the way that I receive a story now is I'm hunted by it, or there's a consistent knock on the door. I open the door, and the story's presenting itself in various themes and places in my life that it won't go away, because I have a need to get to that wisdom place, and the best way to do it is to be engaged with the story. And so that then feeds the process, that by becoming in the deeper relationship with the story again, I get to interrelate to my everyday life, and backwards and forwards. And so it is, it's like a heart beating in the center of it. And I find that there's a great deal of meat on a bone. There's a great deal of marrow, if you like, in the bone of an old story. And yeah, I'd like to just offer a piece to maybe clarify that. It sounds a bit mystical, it sounds a bit far away. So I'll bring it back. And there's a piece about a story that hunted me, that will give a kind of, give a piece to this. So I've been practicing a drumming, just a drumming, a very simple drumming practice at home. And while I was practicing this drumming practice, the person who was instructing me with the drumming, a person called Michael Drake, he shared a very brief story about Grandfather Fire. Let's just call it the Grandfather Fire, and the circle of clever animal brothers, something like that. And as I went and read it, and for that I'm changed, because as soon as I let the story in, it wouldn't let me rest. I had to go back to it again and again. And then what I decided to do is I decided to try and get in touch with Michael Drake, the writer of the book, and I wanted to talk to him about, like, where did it come from. And he'd done the honorable and respectful thing of giving some source in his notes. So then I thought, well, I'll talk to both
people, and I went and talked to somebody called Jade Wahoo, who lives on the other side of the planet in Arizona. And when I related to him, I found that he's had a relationship with shamanism that's been passed down to through generational. And I said, look, I'm really grateful for this chance to cut it all with you, because I'm coming from Aotearoa and I've got this leaning towards stories, and I read this piece, and the story kind of like had its way with me until now. I'm here at your doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, this is great, Ian, let's talk. So we get on the phone and we write some text and we leave some voice messages. And then he says, we'll have a chat. So I sat in here about 6 months ago and said to him, Jay, it's got me.
Mm.
And I said, I need to know something. Where did this story come from? Ian, it's an origin story. It doesn't have an origin. Of course.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Okay, right. So thanks, Jade. Because he brought humour into it too.
Totally.
And then I just asked him, okay, but Jade, I still got to do this. I still got to ask you, like, where did you hear it first? He said, I heard it from my grandfather. And I said, you just got to tell me your grandfather's name. I got to hear you speak his name. And when he spoke his name, I sat where you're sitting and I cried for 15 minutes. And he was very, very kind and very kind of not diplomatic, but he allowed me to have my experience. And he took, you know, like he said, Ian, it sounds like you're doing, you're holding your part of magic.
Mm.
Oh, and then I've been met by the story as well. I've been blessed. And when I'm blessed by that, then I can hold that with respect and relationing. And the next time you and I are sat around a fire, I know that you're going to say, hey, Ian, what's that story about the grandfather fire, right? Because you and I can now have that as a safe container of a story. It's a necessity when you got a beast of a story. And I don't want to do it bad by calling it a beast, but I'm calling this like thing, it's animal.
Yeah.
It's got teeth and claws. And it can change. It can come into our lives and it can rearrange and it can invoke and it can, and by necessity, we as human beings have felt it.
Yeah.
An important thing to share everything from Goldilocks to the Big Bad Wolf to, you know, Lewis Carroll and to layer upon layer upon layer of stories. And there's this piece that I enjoy that's... can you be quiet, please? We're just having a conversation in here.
He's talking to the plane, so just in case you can't hear them. the interruptions of
it's good. Machines. Modernity.
Yeah.
How does that go? Yeah.
And with storytelling, to me, there looks like there's a brew of craft and magic and ceremony and all this wonderful stuff. Does that sit with you? It's like, how do you navigate between those requirements?
Hermes, he's my guy, you know, the one who wears the winged helmet, right? And he's got this job, right? He's got a role, he's got a hat,
yep,
right? And he flies in between like Olympus and the people, because there's a necessary messenger in this, right?
Yep.
So the messenger's going to fly from the lofty heights and he's going to translate something en route. And that fits perfectly into the realm of story, of song, of prayer. And it lands someplace amongst the people.
Mm.
And yeah. I get this piece of like his mercurial capacity to hold a whole host of concepts and ideas, and with like a quicksilver capacity, so the mind is flying. Mm. So this quicksilver nature is the thing that I've been aligned to, and I feel that I've been aligned to it from the solar system. Yeah, so sort of from a wider energetic that alpha, that it's not just Ian Brown, this human thing. It feels like there's a right time and there is a right place, and there's an intersection mm-hmm. there where time and space met in the right way of unfolding, and I happen to be the person who caught that energy because I had the right components to carry them, and then and so too the skill set that I could say, oh, well, I'm interested in clowning, and I'm interested in stories, and I'm interested in the earth and nature and relationing, and I like people. And so without trying to write a shopping list of all of the nice things about me, that just happened to be the set of things that I had, and I never planned that. I couldn't know. This is too complicated to sort of, but in it, there's some practices of things like, you know, intentionality and setting out some kind of plan to go forward, mm-hmm. some kind of like envisaging into the future. And part of it was like I was 40, and it was my 40th birthday, and I was bankrupt, and I was a functioning alcoholic, right? So I say that like not to bash myself or to particularly like aggrandize myself. It felt a little bit like when I came to the culture of Aotearoa, New Zealand, I'd say it was a kind of a colonial tradition to be in relationship to alcohol, and I say that with like respect to, if it's us, then we should be like holding that, mm-hmm. And yeah, in that I found myself at 40 years old in a bit of a dark space, a really dark space. You know, there's pornography that was like really invasive into the masculine world, and mm-hmm. how that was just ridiculously available all of a sudden in kind of secrecy and really dark corners of men's life experience. And those things were my reality, where I was struggling financially, bankruptcy, as I said. And those other pieces didn't feel like I was really finding something. I didn't realize, I didn't have Tūranga Waiwa. Mm. And at that time, Māori concepts through the education system started to be out, to be offered into my body and offered into just seeds, if you like. And I was welcoming them because I thought, well, I'm pretty comfortable in my own Celtic perspective from a Druidic tradition and a well-practiced Druid tradition. And so I have my own Tūranga Waiwa, but I didn't know what it was. So I needed to be away from my place of standing in the Celtic countries, be here to explore what it is to know where to stand. Mm. And as that, I don't want to call it a theory, but that kind of way of embodying life, to be in the life force in Māori order, there's this piece that a visioning appeared at that time. And I had to very consciously say, okay, I'm going to do a whole life refit. I'm going to get my big piece of paper out and my drafting table and my pens and pencils and colored things and color in a mind map mm-hmm. with clouds and thoughts and possibilities and dreams and what I was and what I'd like to be and where I'm going. And so I reached that crossroads. And as I reached that crossroads of choices, I can look back at it now as a person that's been through the journey 15 years later, that decided I will be a storyteller because that fits the clown and that fits the drama, that fits the music, the drumming, that fits the laughter yoga that I was practicing at the time, that fits my druidry and my passion for world mythology. And oh, I have those things. Mm-hmm. I'm just not integrating them. I'm not like connecting with others. It's a beautiful question.
Mm.
And I'm really grateful to be able to go to that place again. Because here in all of this light that we find ourselves in this space and all of this new life of the birds tweeting around us and things, I feel safe to let that thing not have its way with me.
Good.
To show that I've moved, to feel, to be recognized that I've moved through.
Archetypes.
Okay.
And the returning to and the use of archetypes. We've got mutual friends and acquaintances who, like Martin, you mentioned before, uses the archetype of the wolf a lot, and Tom Hirons uses the archetype of the bear a lot. Where do archetypes fit within your journey and your storytelling?
Oh, goodness, good question. I'm really enjoying this. Oh, yeah. When I was 40, when I was going through this process, I looked into the Druidic Order, and there was one of the space holders of the Druidic Order who'd created some sets of archetypes and cards, card forms, story archetypes. She'd created like a deck of characters, archetypes and quests. So you have the questing knight, and you have the emperor, and you have the page boy, and you have the messenger, and you have very specific roles within stories that an audience, listeners, sharers in the experience can envisage together from a collective mind. So the archetype is in my perception, is how our collective consciousness needs to have the stars in the sky, so that we're held in some kind of map, in some kind of structure, so that it's not just a homogeneous black plop of night sky, which would be the soup of stories, and to be dropped into the soup of stories would be terrifying for myself or any individual to get dropped in. So the archetype seems to be this piece of consciousness, this piece of collective consciousness that we can readily apply our knowing to. And we can introduce people to new archetypes. And one by one, we collect these archetypes, either consciously or unconsciously. We say in our culture, hey, there's the cap and badge guy. He's a thing. We know him, you know. Here's the big matron. And we know what that means. And often I get kind of queer and curious. Like I question and I queer the kind of idea of like racial stereotyping and racial archetyping. Because where does the lion sit?
Oh, look, I did it to you again. We're bound by the constraints of half an hour show. I'll continue this conversation in the next episode. You can watch the full video of this interview on hearthtales.com. Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearthtale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearthtales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.